All right, so I'll call this meeting to order and begin with a motion to approve the minutes from February 3rd. All right, motion from Legislator Hansett. Can I have a second?
Second.
Second from Legislator Hewitt. Any discussion on the minutes from the last meeting? All right, seeing none, I'll call the question. All in favor of approving the minutes? Any opposed? All right, the minutes are approved unanimously. Before we get into our resolutions for tonight, Legislator Walter, the prior chair of the Law Enforcement and Public Safety Committee, is going to be giving us a presentation on centralized arraignment. I'm very much looking forward to it because it is a topic I'm excited to learn more about. And we do have one of our justices present, Judge Bacon from New Paltz. So thank you, Judge Bacon, for being here. I know that this is a topic that affects your work. With that, I'd like to let Legislator Walter take it away.
Thank you. Nettie, am I able to share my screen?
Let's see. Advanced sharing options. Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah, I believe so.
Let's try it.
Give it a whirl.
All right. So, you all see it? So this is a little history story that started in 2007, and I thought I'd take advantage of like giving you the whole thing because I am among the only two people in this county who actually know the whole story. And if I got hit by a bus tomorrow, I wanted to make sure you all knew also. And so don't expect to be able to see this. I'm going to break this down, but this shows you that this process started from 2007, brings us to now, and I think you'll find it interesting. There are heroes and villains in this story. So without further ado. So we'll start in 2007. So you probably, I mean, the legislators, you hear the word Harrell Herring all the time. And so in 2007, there was a Harrell Herring versus the state of New York, and it was a lawsuit. It was a class action lawsuit against with 20 different defendants, and basically was found that New York failed to provide adequate funding, resources, and oversight to the public defense system, threatening to deprive these defendants of the class they represent and their constitutional right of a meaningful and effective assistance to counsel. So that happens in 2007. Then in 2013, the Office of Indigent Legal Services releases their first CAFA grant, RFP. That's Counsel on First Appearance. And so that's done in 2013. And at the time, I think he was Deputy Executive Rob Sudlow, who previously was Rob Sudlow from the probation? Where was he, Nancy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but deputy executive, he reached out to me and said, "Hey, Eve, will you write a grant for us to respond to this first CAFA grant?" And so I partnered with the public defender at the time, Andy Kossover, and we came up with this plan. And so the plan had a couple of elements to it. I'll just say that the CAFA grant basically was to monitor, study, and make efforts to improve the quality of services pursuant to Article 18B of county law. So monitor, study, and make improvements. So I think they contacted me because monitoring and studying is the kind of thing I do. And so we came up with this CAFA plan for the county. It was very innovative. We were going to develop interactive software that connected the magistrates, law enforcement, public defenders, and the DA's office to coordinate calendars and allow judges to identify like which public defender's on and which district attorney's on for off-hours arraignment in some seamless way. And also to share the data that the idea would, if arrest was made, the arresting officer can sort of shoot information to the judges and the public defender and the district attorney, who can then show up in this middle of the night arraignment and be informed and ready to go. again, you probably all know that off hours means a lot in our county because our courts don't meet all the time. And so off hours could be when the courts close, it could be at night, it could be on weekends. The second part of this grant was to conduct in-depth interviews with judges regarding how their current off hour, how does it already work? Like what's happening in Ulster County right now? And how do does the magistrate feel this could be done a lot better? We had anecdotally understood that there were already problems happening in that some magistrates don't always come out and other magistrates pick up the slack. We knew that anecdotally. We wanted to really formally understand it and also hear what could be a plan, what could we do? So then in 2015, we get the grant, $604,000. We're actually told that it was one of the best proposals of all the counties. They were super excited. We get this grant and we're all ready to buy the software and get this going and meeting with different people. By 2016, we have several different implementation challenges. So what are the challenges? First of all, our magistrates don't want anything to do with this. We're meeting with the magistrates. We're trying to explain this plan. They're nervous. They're anxious. I think a lot of them at the time were fearful that this would one day turn into just one court for the county and they would lose their positions. There was just a lot of concerns. What other challenges? Office of Court Administration, they took, even though their top person was completely supportive of this, the people I was dealing with had so much trouble, but with their attorneys had so much trouble with the judges being on the software program. And they also did, even though my only two questions for the focus groups or the interviews were, how's it working now and what can it be better? They took over a year to approve those two questions and allow me to go and interview the judges. And so in about a year and a half, it took that we softened the software project a little bit where really just the public defender's office and the judges, where the judges can call one number and it would go to the right public defender. And so that at least we had that efficiency, but we weren't gonna be sharing data. And finally, I was gonna be able to go out into the judges and find out how things are working. And the back and forth of the contract was happening between a renewal contract, because we had the first year, but this was a three-year project. We're going back and forth. And unfortunately, and this is a story I've never told until this moment, but now that none of the players are really in the game anymore, right before the contract got signed, my boss at the time, Gerald Benjamin, wrote an op-ed criticizing the existing executive, Mike Hine, for indirectly, not even directly, of overreaching his bounds in terms of the comptroller. So what happens the day after that op-ed comes out is Mike Hine says, Benjamin Sanders out, Eve is out, no more grant to them. So the project gets squashed. The public defender at the time still has the money, so he figures out another way to go. He creates a quadrant system instead where different public defenders are assigned to different quadrants. So that way, at least the judges know who they can contact in off hours. I'm not quite sure what happened to the rest of the money, but that ends up being the, in essence, what we end up doing. So 2017 comes along and we've got a bunch of changes in our New York state law. First, the governor in his 2017-2018 budget changed judiciary law that allowed the chief administrative judge to establish a plan for off-hour arraignment parts in local courts. So what is this? Well, and the Uniform Justice Court Act was modified to allow a rotation of election of magistrates at a cap location. So what does this mean? First, it used to be that a magistrate could only sit at a bench where they were elected. This change in 2017 meant that a magistrate could sit at a bench outside of their jurisdiction and hear cases. So this was the first time we're allowed to have this idea of a centralized arraignment of one place that the judges could rotate and for off hours. And so that way a judge wouldn't have to wonder if they're gonna be called in the middle of the night. They would know their particular schedule. And law enforcement would bring everyone to that location during the off-hour piece. So this couldn't, was not legally possible before 2017, and in 2017 it is. 2019, we have a couple of other changes. The first is a change to the 500C home rule request. So basically at this point, by 2019, in just the 2 years since Cuomo passed the change for 2017, so many counties decided to become a cap county. I mean, basically about, I mean, at this point it's about 17, but counties were rushing to do this. And
it's 26 now.
26 now. Oh, there you go. So 26 counties right now. And so what it used to be was you had to do a home rule request to ask for permission to be able to hold people at one location, such as a sheriff's office. So many counties were asking for the home rule request that in 2019, they changed it so that it just says, you don't have to ask us, just do it. You know, so it just gave everybody permission to do it. The other thing that happened in 2019 is bail reform. 2020, we have COVID. And this all becomes an important part of this entire story. So we pause here until we get to about October 2020. And we begin again, mostly the public defender at the time, Andy Kossover, Juan Figueroa, and myself, and the conversation of how can we do a cap county right here? The sheriff had spoke to the sheriff in Broome County. They have a cap county there. They were super excited and they were really willing to share it with us and talk to us about it. So we bring in we invite the representatives from the magistrates to join us. And Judge Bacon is one of them who agreed to come and be a part of it. And we sit and we talk about, we have Broome County give us an initial lesson on what it would take, all the steps to do it, because now we have so many counties that have done it. We want to learn the right lessons of how to do it right. But what happens is we have our monthly meeting, and every time Judge Bacon comes back, he's like, judges said no. So since from 2006 now till 2020, I've had at least five meetings with judges that are like, nope, 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 nope. Not on board, not interested to do it. But we don't give up. And so we say, well, what's your questions? What are your concerns? Give us a list of what your questions and concerns are. Maybe we can address them. So they give us a list of questions and concerns. One of the big ones is, if bail reform, does it even matter anymore? Are there even these off-hour arraignments? Is it even an issue? And so we gather information. We gathered information from public defender Ruth Boyer. We gather information from New Paltz Police. We find that in New Paltz for 2020, 13%, that there was probably about 50 calls off-hour, and 13% of them were just appearance tickets. The rest actually needed a judge to be present. And we also started hearing that anecdotally, there were some reports that judges who could provide non-monetary conditions of release with bail reform were not considering those. So that means that an officer might go to a judge and say, listen, judge, we need to do something about this person. I'm worried about them. And certain judges were saying, just give an appearance ticket. I don't want to hear about it. And so there was this problem that was happening, not huge, but it was happening because of bail reform. It was not so much reducing the problem. It was actually creating a whole new problem. And so in around February 2021, we bring Broome County in again. We regroup. We tell them all the concerns our judges are having. We really try to figure out our game plan and have all the answers we possibly can have. So we create the free FAQ for magistrates and we give it to them. Then we have August 2021. That's when myself and our criminal justice reform task force presented to the full legislature a whole reform model for criminal justice for Ulster County, and it included this. So that's in August. Still, it's been pretty quiet. We've basically been told the magistrates aren't interested. And there's nothing we can do if the magistrates aren't interested. Nothing we could do at all. I was asked, did you talk to the supervisors? I said, well, what's the point? If the magistrates won't do this, there's nothing we can do. So what happens then? The end of December, around the holiday time, the magistrates have a dinner. And they invited me and Sheriff Figueroa. This is not the first dinner that I went to the magistrates for and tried to push this idea, but hopefully it's the last. So we're at this dinner, and the sheriff is like, we did a little good cop, bad cop. He was the bad cop, I was the good cop. So he was like, you guys, you need to do this. This is the problem, you know, you gotta be on board. He said, he even dare say to them, we could just do it and you'll have to listen to us. We could just put this in and you're gonna have to do it. And then I think I was more of the good cop. And but it was still no, 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 no. And the sheriff had to go. I stayed because it was free dinner. And so of course I'm gonna stay. And somehow, because I think they were hungry and they wanted to adjourn that part of the meeting and eat, one magistrate said this magical thing. They said, raise your hand if you're absolutely against this. And nobody raised their hand. And I thought, oh, here we go. And then another magistrate said, could we hear more from judges in these other counties and find out how things work for them? And Judge Bacon is like, oh yeah, absolutely. So what happens next? So the Judge Bacon arranges for his, whichever magistrates are interested, to hear from judges from all these other counties. In every single county, they said without question, we were with you. We didn't like this idea. We were all no's, and then we did it. And now we're so happy. We couldn't have been happier. Every single county, they're like, well, let's try another county. And the next county is like, we hated this idea when we heard it, but we did it and we're loving it and we're so happy and we wish we did it before, over and over and over. So then in February, Judge Bacon and they have a stakeholders meeting. They bring in the head of the board of supervisors. They bring in other law enforcement. They explain to them this whole idea. And the people are like, yeah, we're happy. We really love this. And then we get a little bit later in February and they tour law enforcement and the sheriff says, here's the space. Here's where we can do it. And they're like, yay, we love this. And so now they have a draft plan in place. They have a stakeholder meeting next week on the 8th, which just allows those stakeholders to know that the magistrates are on board. They voted and they're on board, and to deal with any other questions. And I've been working with the sheriff and been, you know, started the conversations with Deputy Executive Kelly on budgeting. What is it going to cost in terms of any kind of staffing, any kind of rebuild of the space? And so the next piece is we need to submit a plan to OCA to approve. It includes photos. It's pretty comprehensive. And so I'll be working with Judge Bacon and the sheriff. We'll all work together to make sure that this plan is rock solid. Once OCA approves it, it'll be up to us in the Ulster County Legislature to approve that plan. And then we can go forward and have a cap county. And so super exciting. I can't say how long it'll be before this resolution will be in front of you. Originally tonight, you were going to have the resolution for the home rule request until we figured out that we don't need the home rule request. So I had this already scheduled, but very soon, depending on how strong we make this plan that OCA approves right away, you all legislators will have in front of you a resolution to ask us to approve this plan and move forward of being a cap county. The end. And if you have any questions, the sheriff and Judge Bacon, I'm sure, would be more than happy to answer. And myself.
Thank you. Thank you, Legislator Walter. Does anyone on the committee have any questions, or any other legislators present have any questions for Legislator Walter, Judge Bacon, or Sheriff Figueroa?
I just wanted to say congratulations, Legislator Walter, for your hard work and perseverance.
Sheriff Figueroa.
Thank you, Chair. And I also want to thank Legislator Vice Chair Eve Walter and, of course, Judge Bacon. It was not an easy process. This is going to make the criminal justice system more streamlined. This is going to make the way we deal with the folks that get arrested for charges, easier to represent and give them more rights. And it's the whole purpose of centralized arraignment part, which is what CAP means, is to simplify how we do the arraignments in our criminal justice system in our county. And I want to thank the judge, who I'm sure has a few words to say, and the importance of having centralized arraignment, the importance of not being called in the middle of the night several times a week. This simplifies all that. And it really is something that's working throughout the state already. Thank you.
Yeah, if I could just chime in a bit, you know, it's interesting that Eve put together that timeline, because I did exactly the same thing over the past week, because as she said, it's no longer going to the legislature to get the CAP approved. Now it's the third judicial district and the chief administrative judge of the state that has to approve this. So we had these charges that this has been done in secret. And so I went through and did a timeline. I looked through all my emails back to 2017 and put together a good long timeline to show that we didn't keep this secret from anybody. And the turning point really happened after the legislative subcommittee finished its work last August. And then the magistrates started really looking at this, and many of them were skeptical, thinking this was going to lead to district courts. And that was originally what the arguments against it were, and including from the administrative side of things. So we, our committee with Judge Kasich, Judge Weiss, Judge Wires, myself, and Kyle Barnett from Masopus started to, we did a questionnaire. We called up the judges and clerks in these other counties, and we called up special counsel for the other districts. And to a person, as Eve said, they were all in favor. They answered all of our questions. And taking one step back, so the genesis was the Hurl Herring case, which says every arraignment you need a public defender there to represent the defendant. And this has changed. What used to be maybe a 2 a.m. arraignment might take 15 minutes into a 2-hour production. It's unworkable for the public defender. You can't have the poor person, you know, going to sleep at 4 a.m. and then he gets another call. It's unworkable for any human to do that. And for the judges, you know, some of the judges have been on the bench for 50 years. This is not a good thing. And some of the judges don't answer their phones. So this CAP part is a way to solve this. And over the last about 10 days, been really having, you know, discussions with the administrative part of this that has to approve this, and invited them to the stakeholders meeting next Tuesday. Hopefully they'll get to come and see what this is all about and see the groundswell of support for this. You know, I can't say enough for the sheriff how much he's been behind this, and because the former sheriff said there was no way this was going to happen at all. Sheriff Blaricum was absolutely against the CAP court. So the sheriff has shown, I've gone over to the law enforcement center and seen where this can happen. I'd also like to welcome Judge Kasich. She's down at the bottom of the screen. She's on the committee with me. I think I have to leave about 10 after 6 or so, but if we don't get it done, she'll take over then. So we've been having this discourse with the third district, the administrative judge there, and I provided them my timeline going back to 2017, showing that it's been completely transparent. I've showed them that there's from the 2020 CAP review that Indigent Legal Services did, I showed them that 18 courts are doing the same types of hours that we proposed for this CAP. And I provided also the proposed CAP that the committee has drawn up for Ulster, which is modeled closely after Madison County CAP, which also has one city in it like we do. And Kingston, the city of Kingston, would be part of this CAP. And a big problem is that the Kingston City judges rarely go out, or maybe never, for arraignments, and it leaves the burden upon the adjoining towns, like Judge Kasich and Weiss and Barnett. So this would solve that problem. And also in talking with legislator Walter, we've talked about trying to fund a couple of clerks for this position. So at our last meeting, we discussed this once again, and that we voted overwhelmingly to immediately request legislature to pass a resolution to fund the CAP court clerks, and also to immediately advise the third judicial district that we would request they ask OCA for funding for the judges. So that was a big step forward. There's still a couple of judges who are not in favor of this. Part of that was because they didn't want people to be detained for 12 hours. Well, the Court of Appeals said in 1990 that you can detain people before arraignment for up to 24 hours. And they reaffirmed that in 2015 and 2016. So yes, people would be coming to the CAP when it wasn't open after 9:30 or whenever it was, 10:30 at night, and they'd have to wait until the morning to see a judge. So that's less than 24 hours, it's 10 or 12 hours. And that's perfectly proper, and it's happening in 26 counties. And I want to say at our last stakeholders meeting, everybody was in favor of this. The public defender, Ms. Boyer, Dave Clegg, everybody who spoke was in favor. And I understand from Judge Kasich that the Association of Towns now doesn't have any position on it. According to Supervisor Quigley and his conversations with her, they don't have any problem with this going forward. If I'm wrong, then Judge Kasich, please, I'm correct. So
thank you so much.
We're looking forward to this new next stakeholders meeting. And I think I covered pretty much everything.
Great. Thank you so much, Judge Bacon. And Legislator Walter, if you want to just perhaps we can.
Yeah, I'm just going to close it up by component. Saying, yep. Just in terms of the money. So there is still CAFA money that could potentially go through this. And I do appreciate the public defender Boyer is supportive of this and the district attorney. So there's CAFA money. OCA will cover the judges. We'll be working I'll be working with Deputy Executive Kelly on identifying, where this outside funding is and working with the sheriff on, what these exact costs are for capital. And so when we have it in front of, before we have it in front of you, we'll have the actual budget because we have to submit it when it goes, when the judge submits it. So I'll just say anyone who wants to see it, have previews of it, can always let me know if you want to look at it before it actually is before you. But I just didn't want you to see it for the first time when it was in front of you without any understanding. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Legislator Walter. So if anyone has further questions, please direct them to Legislator Walter, to the sheriff, to the public defender, or to one of our clerks if you want help getting in touch with any of the justices or any of those folks. So if it's all right, we can jump into our resolutions for tonight. And thank you so much to the justices for joining us. And I don't expect that you'll want to sit through the rest of it, but you're perfectly welcome to if you are looking for extra Zoom time here.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. Thank you for your service. I used to be on the town board for 5 years, and we all do this for trying to do better for the public good. So I appreciate all your service as well.
Thank you, Judge. Thank you
so much.
Judges.
All right. So with that, we'll go into our resolutions for the month. We'll begin with resolution number 102, confirming appointments and reappointments of members to the Traffic Safety Board. Do I have a motion to discuss?
Motion to discuss.
Thank you, Legislator Hansett. Do I have a second? Please have a second.
Lopez said it.
Oh, great. Thank you, Legislator Lopez. My apologies. All right. So we have Brian Slack with us from planning. And we also, there might be some background that Deputy Exec Ryder can provide. But Brian, if you want to kind of just frame this for us, that might be a good jumping off point.
Sure. Thank you, Legislator. Thank you, everyone, for having me this evening. My name is Brian Slack. I am the newly appointed coordinator of traffic safety, also principal transportation planner for the Ulster County Planning Department. We have 9 appointments and reappointments on the resolution. They're really mostly, most all reappointments. Some are appointments by virtue of their of the office, the individual is being appointed for the first time, but the office has been a member in good standing. These are all volunteers that have agreed after a solicitation in December sent directly to them to sit on the committee for a 3-year term. The Traffic Safety Board meets roughly every month, and on the first Monday of the month at 6 p.m., our next meeting will be held on March the 7th. The committee has been on hold for roughly 18 months due to COVID. And since I was appointed near the end of December, we are now reactivating the Traffic Safety Board. We're looking forward to having these all these members in good standing back on the committee. Most of them come from a law enforcement background, but we do have two from an engineering background, including Brendan Masterson from DPW and David Corrigan from New York State DOT. And we also have the liaison, Gianna Russo, who was an employee for BOCES in Ulster County and has a transportation school bus background as well. And she's also a liaison to the Mid-Hudson School Bus Association. This will leave three vacancies, and we're currently in discussion to fill those vacancies with very likely members of our bicycle and pedestrian community. But we're looking for volunteers at this point in time. I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
All right. Any questions from legislators on the committee or otherwise? So if there's no discussion from folks, you know, I'll jump in here. I was a little bit disappointed when I reviewed the resolution for filling the board, knowing that there would still be vacant seats and not seeing folks from the pedestrian or cycling communities. I fully appreciate the important role that law enforcement plays in the dynamics of traffic. For sure, but I do feel that this is a bit of an incomplete board, even though I think everyone on the board is qualified. Can you speak to the progress that you've made adding folks from the pedestrian or cycling community?
Certainly, I am in discussion. We have one volunteer who has stepped forward, Mr. Tom Polk, who is an employee of Kingston YMCA. He is a bicycle educator. Some of you may be familiar with Tom's work, or maybe have seen him about town. He is very active in the community doing bicycle safety training for all variety of members. He does adult classes and children's classes throughout the year, and also volunteers to fundraise and hand out bicycle safety gear at no cost to members of the community. Tom has agreed to join the board. And so his appointment will be forthcoming. And that is a discussion that I've been engaged with the county executive's office, particularly Mark Ryder, who's here. Then we have two additional vacancies, and we're currently considering a variety of agencies and potential individuals, but we haven't made significant progress. This is an ongoing discussion.
Great. We are committed and have spoken with one individual, Lou Thunder, who we believe has interest in the board, and will be appointing him as the same time as we appoint Tom.
And Lou is a bicyclist. He's a Woodstock resident, I believe.
I believe Saugerties, actually.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Legislator Hewitt, please.
Thank you, Chair Uchitel. I think that as a business owner on Broadway in Kingston, I have a unique perspective on the new bike lanes and what I think we as a society are striving for, a walkable, bikeable region. So I know we're talking about the whole county, but Broadway gives us a unique perspective, because people come into our business and say, isn't this road a mess? And I often have to say, no, this is great. You have to be patient at the red lights. You have to respect bicycles. And so people need to keep hearing that. And so patience is a big part of it. You can't make rights on red. And you can't pull into the bike lanes to make a right on red. And today, this morning, I saw a huge truck just run the red light on O'Neill Street. So we need enforcement for the new types of roads we're building. And we need people like Rose Quinn, who lost her partner to a vehicle death. Last year, we had 3 deaths in Kingston, like Legislator Uchitel recently mentioned to me. And I think we need people who are aware of these issues and the future of a walkable transportation system. Thank you.
Thank you. Legislator Erner.
Thank you, Chair Uchitel. Are any of the appointees currently part of our public transit system? That's my first question. I have one more.
Reviewing them briefly, I don't believe when you say part of the public transit system, are they employees of Ulster County Area Transit or have any direct background in transit?
Or are you saying riders?
Both, ideally.
I don't believe so.
I would encourage adding representatives from riders and folks familiar with either driving buses or things of that sort. And my second comment is just that traffic safety is also, to my mind, a matter of socioeconomic justice. And so we're talking about pedestrian bicycle representatives on this board or mass transit for that matter. I just want to encourage that the board keep in mind who is most vulnerable to those deciding on who the board members will be, that is, who's most vulnerable to traffic violence tends to be the pedestrian, the cyclist, the transit rider, the people who don't have access to their own personal private vehicle, and that tends to be working people, poor people, and that their perspective as the people in the most vulnerable situation, I think, would be extremely valuable as well. Thank you.
Great, thank you.
I should note, if I may, I failed to mention that Gianna Russo, she does have a background in transportation and school bus transportation, but not traditional FTA, Federal Transit in particular. I also have maintained a Class B CDL, school bus driver's license with passenger endorsement. I haven't driven school bus in well over 25 years, but I do maintain that license in good standing. And I'm also work very closely with Ulster County Area Transit through my position at the Transportation Council, but your point is definitely noted. Legislator, thank you.
Deputy Chair Hansett, and then we'll go to Deputy Exec Ryder.
Are you looking for more individuals? Are you looking for more names that that we could submit also?
Yeah, so that's what I was raising my hand to speak to. I heard Legislator Hewitt's recommendation, so we'll take that into consideration. After the two that we're going to nominate this month, we will have one vacancy remaining. Okay. So please email me if you have recommendations, and we will definitely look at that. We are making a great effort to further diversify the board as well. And so.
Thank you.
And Legislator Erner, and then I'll call the question on the folks who don't have more questions, but go ahead.
Thank you. Just real quick, just to put it a little more specific from what I said before, you could also invite a youth representative who like somebody who has to get to school either on a bus or in walking or something like that. And also maybe a senior or somebody else or somebody with riding a wheelchair or other kinds of less mobile folks. That's all. Thank you.
So then, as I'm about to call the question, I will point out that because this is an appointment, we don't have an opportunity to, you know, to wait for the further appointments. So we've got to go forward with this, which, you know, as these folks are in good standing, I think makes sense. So with that, I'll call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, it is unanimous, resolution 102.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. We'll move on to resolution 149, approving the contract, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $8,640, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county with Touch Legal Inc. with the through the Ulster County Sheriff. And if it's all right with everyone, I'd like to start by recognizing Sheriff Figueroa so he can give us some background on this kiosk program.
So good evening, everyone. Again, thank you, Mr. Chair. I brought the assistant warden, Captain Jason Blue, who's going to discuss what this contract entails. Captain?
Good evening, everyone. So this Touch Legal system is the technology that we utilize to provide the incarcerated individual population with legal materials. As a county jail in New York State, as you may or may not be well aware of, we are obligated to put the New York State minimum standards of the corrections, part 7031, to provide individuals with legal services for the purposes of legal preparation with respect to any civil or criminal action that they're going through. In today's forever changing world, of course, laws, statutes, case laws are forever being reviewed and changing. All incarcerated individuals do have the right to access these materials and information while they are incarcerated. A little bit about our program. Currently in our facility, we do have a law library room in each housing unit. We have 8 law library kiosks. There's one in each housing unit. They are available to the entire jail population. They are updated frequently. Automatically to accommodate the forever changing of laws. And again, like I said before, they are a necessity for our facility to be in compliance with the New York State minimum standards.
Great, thank you so much. Does anyone have any questions or points for discussion? Craig, I see you talking, but I don't hear you.
Thank you, Captain Blue.
You're welcome.
We still can't hear you, Legislator Lopez. Okay. Yes, thank you very much, Captain Blue, for joining us tonight. I really appreciate it. With that, I'd like to call a question. If no one has any further discussion.
Can you hear me now?
Hey, here we go. All right, so I take that back.
Lopez. I actually had 6 questions that were all answered. So now I appreciate the details. So thank you.
Thank you so much. All right. So now I will call the question. All in favor?
I didn't get a first or a second, Legislator Ushtel.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can I have a motion to discuss here?
I'll move for discussion.
I'll make a motion. All second. Great. Thank you. Any further discussion? All right, my apologies for that procedural snafu. Now I'll call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It is unanimous. Thank you so much. All right, we'll move on to, and thank you, Captain Blue. I presume if you've got better things, you will not be faulted for departing, but you're very welcome to stay. Moving on to resolution number 150, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $97,246.60 entered into by the county with New York State Technology Enterprise Corporation. This is the Emergency Management Department. Do I have a motion to discuss?
Motion to discuss.
Motion from Deputy Chair Hansett. Second.
I'll second.
Second from Legislator Lopez. And first, I'd like to recognize Director Erickson to give us some background on where we're at with this project and with the vendor. I know we spoke about the project last time, so maybe you can focus on the specific work that the vendor is working on.
Okay, thank you, Chairman. So this is to amend the contract with NYSTEC. We currently work through phase one, which is source selection. And this portion of the contract is going to be phase 2 and 3, design, build out, testing, and cutover. NYSTEC has been fully engaged in the project. very extremely helpful with us. Phase two, the design specifically, we're getting into, they're going to be attending meetings at our request, support through site selection, pre-design, schematic design, design development, any documentation and construction, contractual negotiations. And then phase three, the build out, installation, accepting testing, which is extremely important, and cut over the project. So right through June of 24.
All right, does anyone have any questions for Dr. Erickson or points of discussion? All right, I'll ask something. I did notice in the backup that there were a few different contracts that we've worked with this vendor on, including one contract that's still active. Is there a reason why that we need a new contract at this time, despite one still being active through the end of 2022?
You have to be specific to the contract for me to answer that question.
Sure, so if I... So there's three contracts that are that were included in backup for, and I'm pulling it up now, for this. Let's see if I can find it quick here. So contract. It looks like amendment one to contract number 2020 ending in 580. That contract, it looks like, is good through the end of January. So is that for different work, or is that,
So we have different contracts. So we have a Motorola, which is the radio system per se. This contract is in regards to the government operations center.
Got it. So it's the same vendor doing different projects.
Correct. Absolutely. Yep.
Okay. All right. Great. So the contract that we see here is for the Motorola. And so this is a new contract for the new project. All right. That was my one question. Okay. Anyone have any other questions or discussion points? All right. Then I will call a question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, and it is unanimous. Thank you so much. Moving on, resolution number 151, amending the 2022 Ulster County budget to accept an allocation of funds from the New York State Office of Prevention of Domestic Violence. This is the Department of Probation. Do I have a motion to discuss?
I'll move it.
All right, we got a motion from Legislator Lopez. Looks like a second from Deputy Chair Hansett. Nancy, are you, there you are. Would you mind giving us a little bit of background on this?
Sure, this is an offer for funding that we received just a couple weeks ago. We had to fairly quickly respond with a letter of interest. The funding is for domestic violence victims, and it is, we have a very short period in which we have to receive applications and distribute this money. It has to be distributed by May 31st, 22, which is why we quickly got this into you all for hopeful approval to amend the budget to accept the funding of $94,700.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions? It's hard to turn away money, I will say. All right, so with that, I'll call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, 151 is unanimous.
Thank
you. Dr. Schmidt. Moving on to number 152, resolution number 152, amending the 2022 county budget to create two full-time assistant public defender positions for the public defender's office. Do I have a motion to discuss?
I'll make the motion.
All right, we've got a motion from Legislator Hewitt, second from Legislator Hansett. And we have our public defender, Ms. Boyer, here with us. And if you don't mind, I'll let you give us some background on the two positions here.
Certainly, Chairman, thank you. So a lot of our criminal work is funded by a state grant that's issued by Indigent Legal Services, ILS. And in order to maintain that grant, we have to maintain certain caseload for our attorneys. And right now our attorney caseloads are in excess of what is required for the maintenance of that grant. So ILS is requesting us to add attorneys so that we can reduce the caseloads and provide more effective assistance to our clients.
All right, does anyone have any questions for the public defender? So I have a question. Is there can you speak specifically to why this wasn't possible during the budget process at the end of last year?
Well, the caseloads are consistently monitored. We are on a continuous basis reporting to ILS, and they are providing us with guidance with what they require from us for the maintenance of the grants. So this is a conversation that is continuous and ongoing. Our caseloads are the number of cases that we handled increased. So the years of the ILS budget overlap with the county budget. So the discrepancies in the caseloads increasing are requiring us to hire additional attorneys. For example, right now we have approximately 870 felony cases and only 6 felony attorneys. So the caseload average is in excess of what they require. It's about 145 per attorney. With the addition of these 2 full-time felony positions, it would be closer to about 110 per attorney, which would be much more in compliance with what their mandates are.
So would it be fair to say that this is, it's not necessarily a problem, it's just a feature of the way that this works, that you need to adjust the positions mid-cycle? Mid our budget cycle.
Correct. And these positions would be fully funded by the state grant.
Got it. And that's the next resolution that we're taking up, correct? Or is that unrelated? That's unrelated, right? That's the distribution from oils, and this is the Herald hearing, right? Yeah, okay.
So those are different branches of the same ILS grant.
Got it. All right. I'll go to Legislator Walter, and then we'll hear from Deputy Exec Kelly.
Thanks. So I'm just wondering, Ruth, is the increase something that has, like, was there a backlog of COVID and now a surge, or have you been seeing a steady increase over the last, whatever, 5-6 months anyway, because of behavior? So is any of this related to backlog, or are we seeing actually more cases?
I think that it's because we're seeing more cases, and I couldn't really speak to why we're, you know, why we're seeing increased number of people, you know, being criminally charged. I can say that during COVID, the courts were frozen for about a year. There were no in-person appearances. There were no trials. There's a very large backlog of trials now that the courts, specifically the county courts, are opening up. There's a very, very large backlog. Load of trials, which are requiring us to, for example, hire experts and do other work that was on hold during the time that there were no trials.
So can I just follow up with this legislation?
Sure.
Go ahead.
So if say 6 months from now or a year, the numbers go down, does ILS then tell you to get rid of some public defenders? Does it work both ways? So once we have them and they'll pay for them. Like, I'm just looking at Deputy Executive Kelly, who's answering this head. But yeah, I'm just wondering if, you know, if this is a backlog issue and then our numbers start going down, whether ILS ever responds in the opposite way.
I can say that they haven't so far. and that the ILS grant, I believe, is going out at least for another 5 years, that the money is there. And I think that Deputy Executive Kelly might be able to give a more comprehensive response about the funding.
We hope so, right?
Yeah, so let's go to Chris and then Legislator Lopez.
I just wanted to touch on 2 points. One thing that I think you run into with both probation and ILS and other state grants is they're on a different fiscal calendar. So their cycles actually run from April 1 to March 31st. So a lot of the funding is based on when they pass the state budget and their fiscal calendar. If it touches the federal side, they run a different fiscal calendar than us as well. So at some points, we're working on 3 or 4 different calendars that don't jive with what we're doing, because then there's also grant cycle calendars. So that's just some of the technical stuff that comes into play with some of these. In terms of, I guess it's clawback. In any of the discussions we've had with ILS regarding to either the Hurl Herring or the distributions that have been coming out, I think it's probably over a decade now, there has been no discussion. It's been constantly building up the staff and creating more opportunities for equitable kind of representation of the indigent clients. So I've never had any discussions with any of the principals there at ILS that there's been any talk of reducing funding or reducing staff in the event that the caseloads aren't there. But I think it's probably a good discussion to have on that. So we have a meeting with them, I believe, next week to discuss one of the distributions. I think it's 12. So I'm happy to bring that up and feedback to the group.
Great. And then just before we go to Legislator Lopez, I do want to note for Nettie, I just want to make sure that these notes get over to the Ways and Means Committee through the clerk, because I know they'll have these same questions about why the mid-cycle adjustment.
I'll be sure to pass them on.
Yeah, right. Of course, you're on Ways and Means. All right, Legislator Lopez.
Thank you, Eve.
Thank you. Would it be fair to say that bail reform has played a role in the additional caseload? Not necessarily that it's additional, just that, you know, the change in discovery period times have, put a larger caseload on the DA's office, and could be a reason why you're looking for the additional help in order to offset.
I couldn't really speak to the burden on the DA's office regarding the discovery reforms. I'm the public defender, so.
The public defender, right. Understood. Okay, I gotcha.
There's an additional burden associated with each individual case, but I don't know that that has an impact on having, an increased client base.
So you actually see the client bases has increased.
Correct. Our numbers of cases per year continuously increase.
Gotcha. And you've seen that more over the past 2 years or this past year?
Well, definitely this past year. And I don't know if COVID and the economy played into that, but I definitely saw a significant increase between 2020 and 2021.
Okay, thank you.
Where the courts were closed in 2020, essentially.
Correct, but people didn't stop getting charged with crimes.
Right. Right. So even though the courts were closed, you're saying that there was an increase in compared to like 2019.
That's correct.
Okay. All right, does anyone have further questions or points of discussion? All right, then we'll call the question on resolution number 151. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
It was 152, Chair.
Sorry, 152. Thank you. Keeping an eye on me, the outgoing chair here. So 152 was adopted unanimously. We have another one with the Public Defender's Office in resolution number 153, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to enter into an agreement with the New York State Office of Indigent Legal Services for distribution number 12 through the Public Defender's Office. And again, Ms. Boyer, I'll let you kind of frame where we are with this.
So the Public Defender's Office made a request to ILS to fund certain things to help us in the operation of our office. And they agreed to do that and submitted a contract, hopefully for the legislator's approval. And so specifically that would fund our conflict family court defender who works in Poughkeepsie when family court in Dutchess County has conflicts. It's an Ulster County public defender who takes on those cases. In addition, it would fund expert services such as forensic mental health evaluations and things of that nature. In addition to that, computer and technology, software improvements, training for lawyers and support staff, in addition to memberships and professional associations such as the New York State Defenders Association. I've encouraged all of the lawyers to, you know, use that as a resource. So those are the things that Distribution 12 would fund.
Any questions? First, I'll go to folks on the committee, and if there are none, then I'll go to Legislator Walter. Any questions from the committee? And I'll go to Legislator Walter.
Thanks. Just while it's in my mind, if Deputy Executive Kelly and Public Defender Boyer, whoever's when you're talking to ILS, can you check about either the distributions or CAFA money for centralized arraignment?
Yeah.
Please.
And Abe, if you can give us a motion.
Oh yeah, sorry. Can I get a motion to discuss? All right, Legislator Hansett, and can I have a second? Legislator Hewitt. All right, any further discussion? All right, seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? Any opposed? All right, 153 is unanimous. We do have some old business. Legislator Walter called me earlier in the day and had a couple of questions about some prior topics that were on prior law enforcement and public safety agendas. So I'll first go to Legislator Walter to bring those up.
Thanks. So I was just hoping, Chris, there's three things. One, if you could tell us what the status is of the reentry RFP, is the first one. I don't know if you're prepared to tell us now or get back to us. Let me know if you want me to keep going or whether you want to answer.
Yeah, well, let's hold off and.
I just didn't know if you have the answer right now.
Deputy Exec Kelly, yeah. Do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, so we've circulated it to all the different parties on it, including the sheriff. So I think we're getting ready to send that out now.
Okay, so do you know when? I mean, I thought it was sort of all cleared and everybody was circulated and liked it like 2 months ago, so.
I just sent the latest copy over to mental health. So we're all on the same page. So I'll get the answer for you.
Yeah, please. Because it's almost coming on to a year since we approved it.
A year?
Yeah, it's getting close. It was one of the first ones we approved when the Criminal Justice Reform Task Force ended. So okay. August will be a year. The next one is we had an amendment to the 2022 budget for professional standards supervisor at the sheriff's office.
Mm-hmm.
What's the status on hiring that individual? That was a high priority for the Criminal Justice Reform Task Force.
I signed the request to fill, so the sheriff should have that. I probably went over yesterday or today.
Terrific. And then the last is I shared with you a draft of an 18B plan. I know ILS doesn't require it, but would like it. Any chance that you've either looked at it or maybe if you, me, and the public defender could sit down? I feel like we should get it to ILS. They're kind of
I mean, yeah, we have to review it. And then I'd also want to bring in the assigned council administrator, Jim Lynch, who's, this is within his area. So yeah, I think me, you and Jim could certainly sit down on that one.
Yeah, can we do that soon? Get that to ILS? Super. I mean,
well, you know, I mean, yeah, I don't, so yeah, I mean, we'll review it. I don't know that we're gonna, yeah, I think we have to have the discussion.
That's what I mean. Can we move along on that so that ultimately we can get to them? Because that's been dragging for a couple of years now. Not by you.
Okay.
By your predecessor, I'll say.
Understood. Yep. Happy to have the conversation.
Thank you.
All right. So I think I don't believe there's any further old business to discuss. On new business, I just wanted to share that April's meeting is going to be at the Restorative Justice Center. So I think all the committee meetings are going to be in person in April, I think is the plan. So this one's going to be in person, but a few blocks away from where it would have been otherwise. It's going to be on Broadway at the Restorative Justice Probation Complex in the new space on the Restorative Justice side. So I hope everyone will be able to join there, and I'm really looking forward to seeing everyone in person. I will also share that the following month's meeting, our hope is to do the meeting at the Law Enforcement Center. And I spoke with Deputy Chair Hansett about this earlier, and I actually spoke with Legislator Hewitt about touring the Law Enforcement Center recently. I think it's a great experience for all legislators to be able to do that. So what I'd like to do is, what I think we'll do, although it's not certain yet, is have a slightly earlier meeting time for those who want to do the tour, and then to have a regular committee meeting time for those who have already seen it, or you know, any of the you know, county staff that don't necessarily need to do that. So that means that it would be good to know how many people want to do the tour. So please reach out to me or Nettie just to just kind of register your interest in that. Again, I think it's a great experience, particularly if we're able to see the jail and you know, the kind of experience there is pretty interesting. Do we have any other new business? All right, well, with that, then I will take a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
All right, do I have a second? Okay. Second from Hansett. That was the motion from Hewitt. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, thank you so much. We are adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Good night.